From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In Pratibha Pumar's film about Alice Walker, the activist Howard Zinn says Alice goes her own way. And in the film, you can see it at every turn in her life, her childhood in the segregated South, her social activism, her writing. She has to speak out. Pumar says it's her essence. Walker herself describes it as her disinterest in submission. And Alice Walker's always been more interested in the whole picture, not just the oppression of whites against African Americans, but the oppression within black culture that gave voice to her strong sense of feminism. But there are costs to that kind of commitment, and in Pumar's film, she explores them. Today in the program, we continue our documentary film series. We're talking about Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth. Pratibha Pumar will join us. Alice Walker will too, after the news.
Still thinking about that conversation on StoryCorps? Or the story you caught last weekend on Snap Judgment? The voices you hear on public radio stay with you. You can have a lasting effect on public radio, too. KUER sustainers give ongoing monthly contributions, providing a steady stream of income so we can continue to bring you the programs you can't get out of your head. Become a sustainer today at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Some time back, the filmmaker Pratibha Pumar was watching some documentaries. They were films from the PBS series American Masters, and she started to notice something about the films. The subjects were all remarkable men, but they were all men. Where were the women, she said, she asked herself. And what about the women of color? It was a gaping abyss, and that's how Pumar has described it. And so she went on this journey to fill the gap. Her choice to fill it was the writer and poet and activist Alice Walker, a person who's had a powerful effect on American culture. Her film is called Alice Walker, Beauty in Truth. And next week, we're going to be screening the film in Salt Lake City. We'll tell you more about that a little bit later on the program. Today in the program, Pratibha Pumar is joining us. Alice Walker is too. And you can join the conversation if you like. If you have comments or questions, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Pratibha Pumar directed and wrote the documentary film Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth. Her past films include Nina's Heavenly Delights and A Place of Rage. And Alice Walker, of course, the author of numerous books, including Possessing the Secret of Joy, Meridian, and, of course, The Color Purple. Her latest novel is called Now is the Time to Open Your Heart. And Alice Walker, Pratibha Pumar, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Pratibha, let me begin with your first encounter with Alice Walker. Before you met her, actually, because I've heard you talk about this, you've said it was when you first read In Search of Our Mother's Gardens, Alice Walker's book there, and something in that book really resonated with you.
Yes. You know, it was remarkable because I remember the exact moment that I was reading In Search of Our Mother's Gardens. I was on a beach in Portugal, and at that time I lived in London, and it was my holiday reading. And I was reading these essays, and I felt as if the writer was really speaking to me personally and to my own history as a woman of color. I just, I devoured all of her writings. Never, ever imagined that one day I would be meeting Alice, and let alone making films with her and about her, and having the gift of her friendship in my life.
And then you met her later, and you became friends. And I want to ask, before I get to Alice Walker's impression of this story, did it help or did it hinder things that you became friends, that you were making a documentary?
I don't think I would have thought about making the documentary had we not been friends. Hmm. Because it really, the documentary came out of my knowledge of and understanding of Alice, not just Alice Walker, the writer, the public persona, the public person, but also Alice Walker, who is a human rights activist, Alice Walker, who has a history in the civil rights movement in the U.S. And so because I had got to know Alice in her multifaceted complexity as a friend, that's when it became obvious to me that this there was this huge gap and that her story and her history needed to be told. So I think, if anything, our friendship actually brought an intimacy to the film, because when I was talking to Alice, interviewing her off screen for the film, there was, there were some difficult conversations. And at one point, I remember Alice, after we'd finished shooting one interview, she said, Pratibha, we would not be having these conversations if we were not friends. And so, it was the gift of our friendship that gave us the gift of this film.
Alice Walker, a lot has been written about your life and, of course, your work. So what did – I guess that seems to answer the question I was going to get at, and that is, what did you make of the pitch when Pratibha said, I want to do a documentary? Did you feel reluctant in some way?
Well, the reluctance was just that I was not sure I had the time or the energy. I was feeling not particularly vibrant at that time. But on the other hand, I really trust Pratibha as a director, and I've worked with her for many years, and I know what she can do. She can do such amazing things with the camera, and just her way of thinking, I appreciate. I also love, her sense of color and her sense of, just vibrancy and what is alive in the world. It's so important to work with people who understand what is still alive in the culture, what is still alive in humanity, and what can be roused by great art.
You know, that idea of color and vibrancy, I think, comes through, and this is something, Pratibha, I know you've talked a little bit about, that is the visual imagery, the importance of nature. That surprised me, the importance of seeing the outside. I mean, how crucial that is to Alice Walker's story and how much of a kind of a visual element it is in the film.
Yes, it was so interesting to me because it was a very organic process of making the film. And I think coming back to sort of what you said before, being friends and having engaged with Alice's writings for so many years, it was very clear to me that nature had played a very important and intrinsic part of her spiritual growth and her growth and her creativity. And also as a sort of it was a rescue. It was a place of rescue and a place of refuge for Alice in many ways. And that's something that I'd picked up in her writings, but also from knowing her. And it just seemed, to me that if the film was to do any kind of justice to the essence of who Alice Walker is, then it had to be incorporated within the kind of the beauty of our natural world and the beauty that surrounds us, which is so prevalent in a lot of her poetry and in her writing. And there's this wonderful line in the film. Where Alice says that when she was growing up, they lived in this shack, which was way, way out into the woods, away from the main roads, and that trees were much more familiar to her than people. And to me, that was just such a beautiful kind of metaphor, in a way, for so much of her connection to nature.
You know, there's that part. There's that beautiful connection to nature, that part of the story that I imagine you would, Alice Walker, welcome. But of course, we have to also say the film really gets at some intimate and really gets into some personal territory, too. Failed relationships, sexuality, your estrangement from your daughter. I mean, those, of course, cannot be easy to talk about. But you did. And I wonder if that gets at a sort of a bigger theme that you have to tell the truth. Is that fair to say?
Well, maybe. But in my opinion, nothing is bigger than nature, and that we take care of it. And that's been my focus since I started. And you can look around you wherever you are and see that we are nature, and we, with all the other parts, are being decimated. We're being destroyed, and that's happening in Utah, and it's happening everywhere. And this was always very clear to me, that people were just so insensitive to the very foundation of their being. In Georgia, for instance, the people destroyed the soil by overcropping with cotton. They actually planted cotton for so long that they ruined the entire landscape there. And then, of course, being very ignorant about how you heal nature, they imported kudzu, which then devoured, you know, a lot of the forest because you can't stop it. So I've been very concerned about these things, not just about, you know, people, and not just about my own personal relationships. Mm-hmm. Some of them have failed. A lot of them have been successful. A lot of them have been happy. Some of them have been sad. But the background to everything, in my opinion, is our relationship to the natural world, which is actually us, too.
Yeah. You know, I've heard you mention one of the things that your mother's garden taught you was patience. Would you say something about that?
Well, I don't recall what you're thinking about, but
somebody asked you a question of what it was that you learned from your mother in terms of her garden, and one of the things you said was patience. But I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, because maybe
I'm not. Don't worry about me. I think one of the things, you know, I learned so many things from my mother and her connection to her garden. So patience would be one, because you can't hurry what you're trying to grow. You have to wait.
Yeah.
And we see in some of our supermarkets what happens when you do hurry. You make a mess of what you're trying to grow, and it's not nutritious, and people shouldn't eat it. So, yeah, I learned a lot of patience, and I learned a lot about beauty, and I learned a lot about what it means to be an artist, no matter what your medium is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that – yeah, so I was just going to say, add to that, was I think that was one of the essays in Search of My Mother's Gardens, where, you know, Alice writes about her mother's garden and the way in which so many Southern black women were artists and could have been these incredible artists, but were never really given the opportunities or the space because they, you know, they were enslaved. And I think that section from within in Beauty and Truth is sort of, for me, one of those sequences in the film, which every time I view it with these images, one after another, of the African-American women who were from that time, who were enslaved and then subsequently became freed, with Alice's voice actually talking about what happened to these women? What could have happened to them had they been given the opportunity in the space to allow for their creativity? And I think that was very poignant, really.
There's a great story I've heard you tell, Pratibha, about you were going through some of Alice Walker's work. This was at Emory, and you came upon a cassette tape of her, a much younger Alice Walker, reading In Search of My Mother's Garden. You said you were blown away by it.
Yeah, absolutely, I was. Because, first of all, tape on it had said, it was just some messages that are telephone messages that had been left on Alice's phone after she won the Pulitzer Prize. And so I thought, oh, okay, because I was doing my thorough research, I was listening to everything. So I thought, okay, I'll just have a quick listen of this tape before I move on to the next one. But the tape turned out to have been wrongly referenced, and it turned out that I suddenly heard this voice, and it just kind of, you know, had a Southern lilt to it. It was quite raw. And then, of course, I recognized the words that were being spoken, that it was from In Search of Our Mother's Gardens. And I realized that it was Alice. And it sounded to me like it was Alice at her own home with a little cassette recorder. But that's what it sounded like. And so the rawness of it, the fact that it wasn't polished, to me, the immediacy of that and a kind of a visceral connection that voice led me to the words was something that, you know, as a filmmaker, it's a gem. I kind of felt like I'd found a gem, and then I built a whole sequence around it in the film.
Yeah. Let me ask about, I guess you, we have to go back to Eatonton, Georgia. And Alice Walker, I want to make sure I get the greats right. Great, 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 great grandmother who, this was such a great story that you tell in the film, walked from Virginia to Georgia as a slave, two babies on her hips, as you put it, lived to be 125 years old. And you kept your maiden name as a way of, you say, honoring that walk.
Well, yes, because I had the name of the persons who had enslaved us as a family, an Englishman, and I really didn't want it. And I wanted instead to honor my ancestor who had walked all that distance, carrying two children that were probably not even hers. It was a great walk, you know, so Walker is fine for me.
Right. How important, Pratibha, is that idea of history? The reaching
okay.
back, how important is that to the scheme of the film?
Well, I think that it's crucial that we do not, you know, part of my intent with this film is to really ensure that there is no erasure of different kinds of histories. In schools and colleges and everywhere, you know, there is very much the sort of the white male literary canon that is taught. And I was really intent that with this film and other films that we ensure that particular histories that belong to the canon, if we can even talk in those terms, should be part of that. You know, history is something that makes all of us who we are and how we interact with history, but how we too are made by history. And with this film, what was important to me was to show the story of this, incredible life that was lived through tumultuous political, cultural moments within U.S. history. And that so Alice Walker was both born into these times and these histories, but she in turn helped to shape that history and these cultural moments. And I think it was that kind of organic relationship between how we shape histories and how certain individuals shape histories and changed the discourse around how, you know, the visibility of Southern Black women, changed the discourse around representations of Black women generally around sexuality, around self-determination. And so all of these don't come just begin in this moment. There are antecedents.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we said, as, you know, Alice's great, 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 great grandmother, you know, she was as much part of who Alice is now, yeah, today and went on to become as, you know, and that was crucial to me. So, you know, yes, history is a very important part of any kind of filmmaking, and particularly a biographical film.
Just like to say, I don't want to omit my Cherokee ancestry. And I'd like to just remind us of all the Native American women, most of them, I'm sure, a lot of them artists, because we still have so much of their art to look at today, were denied all of the things to be artists that Black African women were denied. And this also applies to the English and the Irish and all the other European people who became intermixed with African Americans and Native Americans. So a lot of those people who disappeared from the white world. And I often wonder how people actually could do that, just, you know, sell off their relatives because they changed color. But those people were denied once they became a part of the enslaved people, they were denied the opportunity also to express who they were creatively.
I want to play a moment from the film. This is Alice Walker speaking for herself in the film. But there's this part where she talks about how her mother's love was really found in the sacrifice that she made. And I want to ask you about this, but let me play this moment from Pratibha Pamar's film, Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth.
My mother was earning at that time $17 a week. She worked every day. Out of that $17, she managed to buy me a typewriter and a suitcase and a sewing machine, because at that time it was cheaper to make your own clothing. In the face of that kind of love, which is not, she never said, I love you. My mother didn't learn to say, I love you, until she was an old woman. But the love was so apparent in the sacrifice of her life that, you know, I knew I had to really do well. And
lovely moment from that film. Seems like you figured, Alice Walker, that the life you lived in some ways would have to live up to that sacrifice of your mother. Is it fair to put it that way?
Well, I could not ignore it once I understood what was going on, once I understood that she was never meant to be one of the mothers you see on television, yeah. You know, who are always there with cookies.
Yeah.
She didn't have that kind of life, and I had to not want that kind of mother, actually. I had to really understand that the woman who was my mother was truly a great person, and her sacrifice was the representation and the embodiment of her love for her children.
So I get the typewriter part. I even understand the suitcase. The sewing machine, did you use that much? I mean, did that come in handy?
Did you? Yeah. I made my own prom dress.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different world when you have to make your own things. And I actually think it's not a bad world. I travel a lot, and I see in many cultures still that people create things. I live in Mexico part of the year, for instance. And there, many people still make beautiful things. They know how to do it.
Yeah.
And here, I have to say, you have to go sometimes quite a ways to find people making beautiful things. I mean, they can make beautiful things, but they're often extremely expensive. They're extremely precious, you know.
Yeah.
And you have to be a special person to know how to do anything. But there are cultures still where people just know. You know, they know how. In India, for instance, I've seen people sewing mm-hmm. on their porches, you know. And I think it's very good.
There's a moment. Pratibha Pamar, I want to ask you about this part. And of course, we'll get Alice Walker to talk about this too, but where Alice is talking about that a writer has to give voice not only to the bitterness, but also to, as she puts it in the film, neighborly kindness and sustaining love. Would you talk about that? That, because it seems like that idea of balancing those two parts are a really important part of her life.
I think that's the extract that she is reading from her novel, The Third Life of Grange Copeland,
yeah.
Which was Alice's first novel, which I think, you know, should be alongside The Color Purple, which already is, but I think that The Third Life of Grange Copeland should be an absolute essential book that every school and college should have in their reading lists. Because I think that, you know, and Alice can talk so much better about her book than I can. But for me, I picked that particular extract from the book because it spoke to me in so many ways about the complexity and the nuance of Alice's writings, and of all her writings and her approach to the world and her approach to life, that, you know, nothing is, it's everything is part of a contradictory matrix. And that if we are as human beings going to come through and live our full potential, then we have to also look at the kind of the shadow side of all of ourselves,
yeah,
and how we live with that shadow side and how do we actually get past that and make peace with it. So that, you know, even within the color purple, Mister, who is portrayed and is this has this incredible arc and an incredible journey, so that at the end there is redemption, that he does see the errors of his ways. He does come into a consciousness, which means that he changed, that he moved on. So that no, you know, and I think Alice can speak about that way more eloquently than I can.
Well, it's just that we do change.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the only thing we can be sure of. One way or the other, we will transform. And I feel for Mister in The Color Purple, because imagine, he had nobody to teach him history. He had nobody to teach him what had gone before. He had, you know, rumor and innuendo. Mm. He had a preacher who came, you know, every Sunday and basically talked about, you know, people living thousands of years before and, you know, not at all like him, really. And so he had a lot to contend with in order to understand who he was, why he was the way he was. And I have so much compassion for him and for his father, who would have been the son of, you know, of a slave owner, actually. And then the compassion I have for the father is because if there had not been the Civil War, he probably would have been sold by his father. So if you think about all of that, you know, all of that pain and suffering, it is very hard to consign people to, you know, hell and oblivion,
right,
without stretching out a hand, you know.
The other thing that's interesting, I think, about Mister is that people have the image of Danny Glover, but Mister in the book is a small man.
Yes.
And I think it seems better to me as a small man.
Right? Well, I agree with you, and I'll tell you why. Because I wanted to show how even a small man has power over women. Almost any of those women really could have just beaten him up. But because he had patriarchy as his background and his source and his strength, they were afraid of him. And that is the truth. I mean, I think in any culture you will see that very small men can dominate much larger, stronger women just because they have the power of the patriarchy, you know, in their look.
Mm. Pratibha Pumar, this is kind of a theme in the film. And let's go back to The Third Life of Grange Copeland, because this the reaction to this story and I want to play a clip that we'll hear from Sapphire and Sonia Sanchez, writers that appear throughout your film, because they talk about, in Sapphire's case, as you'll hear, she talks about this book being a game changer. But there also was a kind of reaction to it. Like, you know, people understood that you would talk about the oppression of white society, but then talking about violence within African-American society, that seemed like a kind of taboo. Let me play this moment, and we can talk about it from Pratibha Pumar's film Beauty, Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth.
I think the book that really brought me into her universe was The Third Life of Grange Copeland. That was a kind of a game changer for me, that particular book. I'd never really heard anything like it or heard a black woman writing in that kind of way, that really was looking at issues within the family and wasn't just, you know, the white man, the white man, the white man, racism, racism, racism.
Some people were not ready for that dialogue. They would say, we can't talk about that because after all, we are oppressed. And she said, yes, we are oppressed. But there are other layers of this oppression that we must talk about. And if we don't talk about it, we're not going to survive.
Pratibha, how important is this theme in understanding Alice Walker's story?
I think it's crucial because, you know, I think that that's partly where the title comes from, is that, you know, there is beauty in truth. But also the fact that when you do speak the truth, that, you know, often people don't want to hear that truth because it means that they have to confront their own behaviors. They have to make changes. And I think that that's the kind of taboo-breaking work that Alice has done throughout her life, and both as a writer and as an activist. And I think, you know, that the reaction, and it's not something that just happened then, but it continues to this day, that when women begin to speak out about sexism and about patriarchal violence, that, you know, particularly if we are women who are coming from so-called minority communities and women of color, there is this burden of representation that's put on us, which says, well, you know, you're representing your whole race, your whole community. And so you have to create positive representations and positive images. Well, I disagree with that, because I think then we're not actually being honest about ourselves. And if we're not being honest about our own cultures and our own societies and what is happening within our own families, then there is not going to be any kind of change. And who in the end is going to be suffer the most as a result? It's going to be the woman. It's going to be the young girl within the family. And I think that that's a theme that is really as current now as it was when Alice wrote The Third Life of Grange Copeland. Yeah.
Alice Walker, was that a hard one to – did you just think, I have to do this? Or did you figure, I don't dare do this? I mean, did it take a bit of courage to step out there?
Love is courage. I think the fuel of courage is love. I love all of them. I mean, it's not as if I'm writing about the bad things because I hate the people.
Yeah.
It's not that at all. I understand the history too well. One of the things that I really am happy about now, even though it's sad, is that some of the young men who have been abused by older men are now coming out and telling about this and talking about it and, you know, wanting very much to make a difference in the way this kind of power relationship, sexual, I mean, it's not really, it's just abusive yeah. behavior about the way this happens. I think we can only heal if we see the wound. We cannot heal not knowing where we're hurt. And so I feel that my love of my grandparents, I lived with my grandparents for a year when I was 8. I love those people so much that I used to think I would just, you know, explode. Mm-hmm. But what they taught me was that if you truly love people, you can love all that they are. You can't just choose the good parts, you know, you have to, you know, just love them. And then to understand them is your work. That's the work for you, to understand why they are twisted, you know, why they are abusive, why they are destructive. Try to understand that and then go back, you know, if you have the creative art, to unravel some of these naughty places so that other people don't have to suffer in the same way.
That's Alice Walker, the author of numerous books, novels and poetry, of course, including the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Color Purple. Pratibha Pamar is with us. She directed and wrote the documentary film Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth. And next Wednesday night, we're going to be screening the film at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Alice Walker will be with us. Pratibha Pamar will also be there for a Q&A after the film. We should also mention that Alice Walker is giving a reading next Thursday night at The Tower at Rice-Eccles Stadium on the campus of the University of Utah. You can get details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We are late for a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the writer Alice Walker, also the filmmaker Pratibha Pamar, who has directed and written a documentary film called Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth, which we're going to be screening next Wednesday night in downtown Salt Lake City. We'll give you the details a little bit later on the program. Pratibha Pamar and Alice Walker are joining us today from the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland. Pratibha Pumar, let's talk a little bit about the influence of Zora Neale Hurston in Alice Walker's life. You've described her as kind of, in some ways, her literary ancestor. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we would not be reading, and Zora Neale Hurston's books would not be available now if it were not for Alice Walker. Zora Neale Hurston was somebody who lived an incredible life and wrote books, and she died in poverty. And when Alice was looking for who were her literary ancestors, she'd come across Zora Neale Hurston's work. Alice went looking for her grave and found it, together with a friend, created a headstone for the grave. It was unmarked when Alice found it.
Wow.
Zora Neale Hurston's books were, you know, then Alice made sure that Zora Neale Hurston's books came back into print. Otherwise, this is what I was talking about earlier, otherwise we would have lost Zora Neale Hurston. So, you know, it is crucial to ensure that our histories, particularly as women of color, are not lost and erased in that way. Zora, you know, I just saw so many similarities between Zora Neale Hurston and Alice Walker, just in terms of their attitude, in terms of the kind of language that they use in their writings, in terms of the actually fundamentally to both their work is love,
yeah,
and love of the people, right, that they are writing about.
Yeah.
And a love that comes from inside of that community and inside of the families and inside of that world. And it's beautiful to see that those parallels. So I didn't feel that, Alice's story could be told without talking also about Zora Neale Hurston. And, you know, Doug, it was this, you know, there was an embarrassment of riches, as it were, for this film, because there were so many decisions I had to make as a filmmaker about what to keep in, what to leave out, and how to focus it so that all the layers and all the complexities and all the histories were there. But at the same time, the poetry of Alice's life, but also of her words, was within the film, so that those people who were not that familiar with Alice's work would, if this was their first introduction, would be compelled to go and find her work after watching the film. And, you know, the film has shown internationally at so many different film festivals and been broadcast. And the number of emails or audiences, members who have said to me, you know, wow, I didn't realize, you know, she had written that book. I'm going to go out and buy that book now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been great to see that kind of consequence of the film.
Alice Walker, in the film, people talk about the sort of they see a kind of a connection between Zora Neale Hurston's work, Their Eyes Were Watching God, for example, and the Color Purple, that the styles are similar, the kind of blend of vernacular styles of the South with other styles. Where are you on that? Do you see that as well?
We come from the same culture.
Yeah.
That's what I see. She grew up in Florida. I grew up in Georgia. Some of the ways of speaking are very similar, not so much in my generation, but in my grandparents' generation, those grandparents that I spent that year with, they would have loved Zora's work because they would have understood it completely. And in fact, I introduced her work to my brothers, who were much more hardcore Southern black people than I was, because I actually left kind of early. And they were delighted. I would read her stories to them. And they would remember that they had spoken that way, that they had thought in those patterns. It was a great gift to them. And I wanted to share with them what literature is. This is what literature is. This is what what it's for. You know, it is to connect us to our ancestry, is to connect us to our culture, to help us stay steady in our rootedness in who we are, to see the humor of who we are, to see all of the, you know, the humanity of people. And I was able to do that with my brothers, who never read. They never read books. So they had no clue that all of that could actually be in a book, that I could come home and read a book to them that would make them, as they would put it, fall out laughing.
Right. I want to play what I think is sort of my favorite moment from the film. And it's when you're talking about, Alice Walker's talking about the writing The Color Purple. And this, I think, Pratibha, this gives us a kind of an insight about how Alice Walker thinks about the characters that she's writing, because she describes them in this moment as carrying them around from place to place, as you'll see. Here's another moment from Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth.
I tried writing it in New York, and the characters hated New York. So did I. And we decided we would move to San Francisco because of the beauty and the space. And then they didn't like earthquakes. Neither did I. So we came to Boonville, found the little cottage that was $300 a month. And Robert, my partner at the time, and I rented it. And I wrote, he was writing something too. I was carrying sometimes up to 12 people in my mind, and they're all talking, and they're all thinking, and they're all planning their next adventure. So I didn't have a lot of room for other things, and so it was such a delight to be able to just take a year and have all that going on almost all the time.
Is it always like that, Alice Walker, that these characters are just... It seems like a gift, but also kind of a burden. Are they always just sort of populating your mind when you're creating these characters?
It depends on who they are. If they're really energetic and they want attention and they have a lot to share,
yeah.
Then my work is to hold them, to find a space where they can fully expand. And I will do almost anything to give them that space. But I'm hoping... And I also feel that it's ancestral driven. I think that I, for some reason, am called on. You know, we have a poet, Jean Toomer, who always talks about being the last plum on the tree, and that plum seed is what starts the whole orchard again. And so I feel that. I feel that sometimes, that if I don't do this work seeding the next generations, then they will miss a lot of substance and sustenance that they have to have in order to really grow. So I carry these people, these characters, when they insist, and I have moved all over the world carrying them, and I have loved it, and I have loved them, and when they have left, which is to say when I finish the book, I sometimes cry because I miss them.
Alice Walker is with us, activist, writer, poet, of course, including the book, the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Color Purple. Pratibha Pamar is also with us, directed and wrote the documentary film Alice Walker, Beauty in Truth. Next Wednesday night, we're going to be screening the film. You can join us at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City at 7 o'clock. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Pratibha Pamar is going to be there. Alice Walker is going to be there. She's also going to be giving a reading next Thursday night at the Tower at the Rice-Eccles Stadium. It's here on the campus of the University of Utah. You can get details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another very quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio, back now with Alice Walker and Pratibha Pamar. We're talking about the film Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth, which we're going to be screening at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center next Wednesday night. We'll give you some more details about that a little bit later on the program. Pratibha Pamar, I wanted to ask you about, and this comes up in the Color Purple, the idea of a same-sex relationship. And you kind of get into this in the sense that you sort of explore it, the importance of this healing relationship. Jewel Gomez talks about it. Alice Walker also talks about it in the film. Let me play a clip about this because I want to have you talk about this. And just, again, another one of these kind of pioneering moments where you break through and another taboo that you really deal with. Let me play another moment from the film.
Until then, there wasn't really a major novel which included the romantic and sexual love between two women as a part of the natural order of things.
The song I'm about to sing is called Miss Seeley's Blues.
When I was thinking about Seeley's healing, I looked around at all the men that she could have had a relationship with. And honestly, there was not one that would have been a healing relationship for her because they couldn't see her. All those incredibly beautiful qualities that she had, not a man that I could see in the story, could affirm. It would have just been absurd. You wouldn't have believed it. Shug, on the other hand, could see these qualities and affirm them and care about Seeley. So it was very natural that that is how it would happen.
Pratibha Pamar, so much that was kind of taboo about The Color Purple, as a book, obviously, and as the film, as we heard there from 1985, Steven Spielberg's film. What was the reaction like? Because this is a theme in the film, and the kind of, I think you used the word, the trauma that it caused to Alice Walker, the really vociferous reaction to it.
Yeah, you know, when I was doing the research for the film and I was looking at some of the archival footage around the time of the release of The Color Purple of the film, I came across this footage of news coverage of pickets that were being held on the opening night of The Color Purple and, you know, the town hall meetings that were taking place and journalists decrying the film. And a lot of it, the criticism seemed to center around protecting the black family and how same-sex relationship, how it featured, you know, the fact that the book and the film featured a same-sex relationship, it featured incest, it featured wife abuse, yeah. That these were things that should not have been given any kind of space and that this was detrimental to the black family and the representation of the black family. But what I saw was how there was how Alice herself was being personally attacked. I was really, I knew to a certain extent that there had been a controversy around it, but I hadn't actually quite realized the extent to which that controversy had been so personalized. Mm. And how Alice herself had been vilified in this way. And I, in talking to Alice about it for the film, you know, and talking to her about her experience of being in that way, attacked in that way, from the people who she loved, actually, and that, you know, she had written this book from a place of love, and yet it had been interpreted by people so fearful of going to these places of honesty within themselves and within their own relationships. And, you know, how devastating that would have been on her. And when, you know, even though we've been friends and I knew about this, it was only when the cameras were running and I was talking to her and she and Alice was speaking about this that I actually, it struck me that when she said that, you know, it was really 5-6 years before people even began to speak up in her defense. Wow. About her book, and how she just, you know, had to leave that behind and escape into writing her next incredible book, The Temple of My Familiar. So I think that it was, you know, something that I wanted to show in the film was the kind of, you know, the courage it takes to write from a place of truthfulness and authenticity, but that you, when you do that, you are, you know, that people are not always open to what to seeing that truthfulness, and what cost that has on one's psyche and on one's being. And I think that that's, you know, that has continued as a theme, actually, I think, in Alice's life, in speaking out, you know, about Palestinian people's rights and in speaking out about
so many things.
Other, you know, so many things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Alice Walker, did you expect that? And not, let's just maybe broaden it, not just the reaction that you got from The Color Purple, but from all these other things. Do you sort of brace yourself for the reaction, or does it surprise you from time to time?
I go back to nature. I go back deep into the country. And in fact, when I was being really royally attacked, I founded a publishing company called Wild Trees Press, and I began to publish other unpopular people. And I enjoyed it very much.
Alice Walker, activist, poet, writer, including, of course, The Color Purple, joined us today from the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland. Alice Walker, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Pratibha Pamar directed and wrote the documentary, Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth. Thank you very much as well.
Lovely to talk to you.
Yes, and we'll see you both next Wednesday night. We're screening the film, Alice Walker, Beauty and Truth, at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Alice Walker will be there. Pratibha Pamar will be there for a Q&A after. It's our partnership with the Utah Film Center, our Through the Lens series at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center, again at 7 o'clock. And Alice Walker is going to be at the Tower at Rice-Eccles Stadium on the campus of the University of Utah on Thursday night. Details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.